It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The U.S. Navy lists its core values as honor, courage, commitment. Our first guest, Rear Admiral C.J. Janes, has made that her personal motto. Serving as Program Executive Officer for Air Anti-Submarine Warfare, Assault, and Special Mission Programs, she has oversight responsibility for 9 program offices and 7 acquisition programs. Janes is a native of Greensburg and the first female admiral at the Naval Air Systems Command. She is in Pittsburgh as part of the Navy's 50-50 outreach program, and in addition to visiting with summer campers at the Carnegie Science Center, she will tour the Science Center's submarine, the USS Raquin. She joins us now in Studio A, Rear Admiral C.J. Janes. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Admiral Janes, explain the goal of the Navy's 50-50 outreach program, which I understand your visit is a part of.
Yes, it is. It's an opportunity for the Navy to get out, go back to the communities where we grew up, and share what the Navy is doing and be a part of the community and to share the vision of the Navy.
What is it about the Navy's mission that Americans might not understand?
You know, the Navy really is all about protecting the seaways. And so we're forward deployed. We're off the coasts of where we anticipate there to be trouble. It's about keeping the waterways safe, and it's about protecting not just the United States or North America, but to be around the world.
And as you look at the modern weaponry that is available and the nature of modern warfare, it's more than just being on the seas. I mean, certainly that's protecting the seas is integral to the mission of the Navy, but the Navy has some amazing things at its disposal, like those F-18 planes we see the Blue Angels fly, for example.
Right.
So with the advent of modern warfare and the technology that is available, due in large part to the extensive military budget that the United States has, how much has the Navy's role in protecting the shores changed and evolved?
Well, you know, the Coast Guard takes care of the United States shores, and the Navy is forward-looking. The Super Hornets and the Hornets that you talk about, the F-18, you know, those are on the carriers that are forward-deployed. We also have a tremendous underwater presence, and we have the ships around the world. So between the air, the ships, and the submarines, we can be anywhere, anytime, and that's really what the Navy is about. We're quick reaction. We're already there. And we're where we need to be whenever problems arise.
With the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan winding down, we could end up being, by next year, 2014, for the first time in many, many years in this country, a nation that is not at war. How will that affect the role of the Navy going forward and its future as a global force for good as it builds itself.
Right. So we're all about deterrence. And I think just by being there a lot of times, we're able to deter what may have been. So the Navy's role really will not change. We will still be globally present. We will still be there as a deterrent. And we will be doing our part for global security.
How much is it? Has the challenge evolved with there not so much being a situation where we have nations at war, but warring factions and pockets of terrorism? In many cases, an attack may come and you don't know who is behind it. You don't know where it's emanating from. How much of a challenge is that? How much does that change the not just the role of the Navy, but its ability to combat those who want to do this country harm?
Right. So we're part of the Department of Defense. And so with our Army, Air Force, and Marine Corps brothers, we're all in this together. And so we rely on each other. We are a global coalition that works together along with our allies. So it's not just the Navy that owns that responsibility. It's all of us, and we play just a major part in that partnership.
And to the extent that you can talk about it, what are the conversations like as we see attacks on acts of terrorism going back to, I believe it was 2005 or 6 in Spain, an attack on a train system, or even going back to 9/11, as we see those kinds of things happen, not just here but abroad, what are the conversations that the armed forces hierarchy has about how to combat that?
Yeah, so combating those type of issues are really not in a lot of our conversations, at least not in the conversations that I'm involved with. You know, we're here for the defense, and we respond accordingly. When called, we're there. So that I can't really talk too much about as far as what kind of conversations occur there.
It's Central Pittsburgh, and my guest is Rear Admiral C.J. Janes, native of Greensburg, the first female admiral at the Naval Air Systems Command. I understand that as part of your visit to Pittsburgh, you gave a brief address at the Pittsburgh STEM Summit today. Talk about your interest in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education.
Right. So it was a wonderful opportunity to talk at that STEM Council this morning. I am a math major. I graduated from Indiana University of Pennsylvania with both a master's and a master's in mathematics. And mathematics really is what gave me my start in the Navy as an aviation maintenance officer. As I have progressed, I have come to realize the importance of the science, technology, engineering, and math field across the country, and that we need good, solid, technical, analytical engineers to continue to develop and make up our workforce. A lot of the Navy's workforce are civilians who have those backgrounds in STEM. So as what I do now contributes an awful lot to going out into the community, talking with various groups, plus young middle school, high school students, and get them interested to understand that there are careers that they can pursue that maybe they haven't thought about.
And STEM education is something that has helped you achieve a lot of what you have.
Yes.
Do you use that as an example when you go out and you talk to youngsters about it?
Absolutely. I actually started my career as a math teacher, junior high math teacher in Indiana, Pennsylvania. And when I decided to join the Navy, I really didn't think about my math degree giving me what I was going to need to move forward. But as time progressed, I realized it was all about that analytical thinking that allowed me to continue to progress through the Navy. And so I tell that story a lot, and I especially to the young girls, because they don't see female admirals very often. There's only about 30 of us in the Navy to start with out of all the admirals that we have. So it's important for them to see that there is a career path and that you can be just about anything you want to be, but you need that background to get you started.
Are there enough young girls taking advantage of opportunities in STEM?
I don't think so. Personally, I don't think so. We make a big deal of it when we have we have what's called a WOW, that's engineering. We have an Expanding Your Horizons, where we target middle school girls, bring them in, introduce them to engineering activities, and actually do hands-on events with them just to expose them to all different kinds of things. When we have those events, we sell out immediately. So I think they're starting to learn. They're starting to get it. Time will tell, right? We're trying to target the middle school kids. So what's going to happen, you know, 10 years from now? Are they actually going to be in a STEM career field? We'll have to follow them and see what happens.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation with my guest, Rear Admiral C.J. Janes. We have Chris in Moon with us by phone. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks very much, and thank you, Admiral Janes, for your service. I just have a quick question. I just wanted to know what impact things like robotics and remote-controlled naval vehicles will have on staffing in the next few years. And I'll take your answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Well, that's a very good question. Robotics is a big part of the Navy, both aviation and undersea and on the surface. We do a lot of work with robotics. And so you may go from, instead of a manned aircraft, you're going to have an unmanned aircraft, but you still need somebody to pilot that unmanned aircraft. So even though we may go to robotics, we may go to unmanned, you're still going to have somebody behind the scenes that is going to be piloting that aircraft, though it may be from a chair instead of from the cockpit.
And in fact, that was the source of controversy because there, at one point they were talking about awarding medals or decoration to someone who isn't actually in a cockpit but who is sitting in a control room somewhere operating.
Correct.
Robotically. So there is certainly a what is viewed as a skill there.
Correct.
To be able to operate that stuff.
Correct. And many times it will be someone who was an aviator in a cockpit and will now become an aviator of an unmanned vehicle in some cases.
You know, when you talk to a Navy pilot, you know, what is the feeling? Because there's a certain romanticism.
Yes.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I have to share that I actually got to fly in an F-18 in a two-seater, which is the training vehicle behind a pilot. And there's an obvious amount of pride that these men and women take in piloting these amazing aircraft. Now, if you take that away and you make the experience about operating something like an F-18 from a control room, I would think that takes some of the fun out of it. Do you ever hear the pilots talk about that?
Well, I would think it would also, but I don't think we're going to see, at least not in our lifetime, where there are no longer pilots. I think what you can envision in the future is you would have a manned aircraft and you would have an unmanned aircraft as part of the support group that goes with it. I don't think we would ever get to a force where there's absolutely no aviators in the cockpit of the aircraft.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about when you were teaching math was it a high school?
Junior high.
And you decided, I want to join the Navy. What led you to make that decision?
There was really nothing scientific behind it whatsoever. I had received my bachelor's and my master's and thought, I just want to do something a little bit different. And I really thought I was going to join for 4 years. And then I was going to come back and either go back into teaching or do something else. So after my first 4 years, I was having such a blast that I just thought, well, I'll just do one more tour. And then I'll just do one more tour. And before you knew it, 30 years had passed and I'm still there.
You, if I may ask, you were how old when you started, when you enlisted?
25.
That's a little older than probably a lot of people do enlist.
Right.
Did you have any idea, probably, it doesn't sound like you did, that you would end up being an admiral?
Never. Even up until the admiral's list came out, I still didn't have any idea that I was actually going to be an admiral. I was planning on retiring and going off and doing something else when I got the call that my name appeared on the admiral's list.
And I, as you sit across from me now, here you are dressed in your Navy whites, and you have the decorations, all of the ribbons signifying the medals, decorations that you've achieved over the course of your 3-decade career. Do you ever, when you wake up in the morning and you put this uniform on, think, how did I get here?
Every day. And then I smile and I go to work. It's a great life. It's been a great career and I've enjoyed every moment of it.
How tough is it for a woman to rise through the ranks in the Navy as you have?
Some days it was a little harder than others. You are a minority. In my group, I'm an aviation maintenance officer. And within the entire community of about 400 aviation maintenance officer, there's only about 9% women. So you're competing every day against your male counterparts. A lot of times you were pretty much alone, but you just keep going, right? And there's a greater urgency within you to serve and to be successful. And it's a lot of self-motivation. I've had a great career. I've never encountered any problems other than just typical, you know, the people that you're competing against for promotions. And so you just keep your head down, you keep going. When you do have success, I always look back and look to see who's behind me to bring them along. I think it's very important for the younger women to realize you can't be successful, and you got to help those women be successful, and you got to pave the way for them, and then you have to mentor them and coach them along so that when I leave, you know, if every woman that leaves brings two or three up behind her, then I think we've done the right thing.
We hear a lot, and we're hearing a lot lately, about sexual harassment in the military. Did you ever have to deal with anything like that?
I never personally did. I've been very fortunate. I've had great coworkers. And the Navy does have a zero tolerance policy on sexual harassment, sexual assault. So I've been pretty fortunate, but I've also been around very, very professional individuals.
What's the toughest situation you ever had to overcome?
Probably being the only woman in a squadron of 70 male officers and going on deployment. And so you're pretty much alone as far as having a peer group. So you learn how to fit in. You choose and pick your friends wisely and try to become a part of the wardroom the best you can. But on a six-month deployment, if you're the only woman there, it gets lonely because you're just looking for somebody to talk to once in a while. But other than that, it's just a job.
Right? What enabled you to be the first? As I mentioned earlier, and for those who are just tuning in, our guest is C.J. Janes, who is the first Rear Admiral in the Navy's Air Systems Command. She's a native of Greensburg. And for you to travel this path, to be a trailblazer, what do you suppose it is about you that enabled you to persevere through some challenging circumstances?
I think just the desire to do well. Timing was always great. I had the right jobs at the right time that set me up for the next promotion. You have to want to be there. You have to enjoy what you're doing. Every single day when I wake up, I had a smile on my face throughout my career. And so I just persevered. I knew what the next tickets were that I needed. And I had the right jobs, and I had a lot of great coaches and mentors along the way that helped guide me through my career.
I described a bit of what you're responsible for. I don't know that there would be enough time to really go through all of it, but you are responsible for 9 program offices, 7 acquisition programs. Describe for us exactly what it is that you do and that you are responsible for. It's a lot.
Right. So my current job is as a program executive officer. I have program managers and their teams who work for me, and we are the acquisition experts to procure, sustain, and maintain the aircraft. So in my portfolio, I have the V-22. I have H-60s, P-3s, which are being replaced by the P-8s, the Maritime Patrol. I'm also responsible for the Presidential Helicopter Program and the H-1, which are better known as the Cobras and the UEs. So mainly it's rotary aircraft for the Marine Corps and then the wide-body aircraft for the Navy.
And being the first female admiral at the Naval Air Systems Command, what does that mean to you when you think about it?
It means that I have to be the trailblazer, and I have to make sure that I'm looking out for all the other women that are coming up behind me. I didn't realize the impact being the first female admiral was going to have until I met the rest of the workforce. Because as a Navy captain, there are 70, 80 Navy captains. So it was not really a big deal. But when I became the admiral, a lot of the civilian women came up to me and said, we can now look up and see something other than a man. Because until that time, when you looked at the leadership board, it was all men. And so now there was a woman's face on that board. And so the motivation and the excitement that the rest of the workforce felt was even greater than what I was feeling personally. And so I've taken that on to carry those women across the finish line and to make sure that there's opportunities for others to follow.
How do the men respond to you?
I think they like having a little sister in the boardroom, to tell you the truth. It's just been tremendous.
What are the goals that you're still hoping to accomplish?
I want to continue to serve as long as the Navy will have me, make sure that I'm a value and a contributing member, and then look for another opportunity someday, because everybody's naval career comes to an end at some point.
As you get the chance today to travel around Pittsburgh and tour. I understand this is on your itinerary to tour the USS Raquin, the submarine at the Carnegie Science Center, with one of the veterans who served on the Raquin. Talk about what that will, how much you're anticipating that, and what that opportunity is going to be like.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very exciting. I'm really looking forward to meeting him, and to we're going to have lunch, and then we're going to go on a tour. I've never been on that particular submarine, so it'll be good to see that, and just to talk to the veterans. You know, my father served in World War II as an Army veteran, and it means a lot to him to be a veteran. And so I'm looking forward to it very much, to spending some time with him.
And as I understand it, the triennial reunion of veterans who served on the Raquin is this weekend. Obviously, it means a lot to you to be able to connect with these men and women who have served in the past. I'm guessing that when you get a chance to meet a World War II veteran, and there are less and less of them around, but to what extent does that inform you as a current admiral about the Navy's mission, you know, learning from the past to inform you going forward?
Absolutely. And it's just tremendous to meet the veterans and to hear their stories, because they lived in a different time, and the material and the machines that they had were of a different technology. So I love just to listen to them, to hear what they have to say, to hear the trials and tribulations that they went through, and to let them know that their Navy's in good hands now, and we are still taking care of their legacy, and that we're all still family. Once you've been a Navy veteran, you're always a Navy veteran, and you're always part of that Navy family.
When you meet a veteran, say someone who was a Pearl Harbor survivor or who maybe had some involvement in D-Day, and you know, these are men who by now would be in their 80s and 90s, and who at the time probably never could have envisioned a woman rising through the ranks to become an admiral in the Navy. What do they say to you? How do they react to you?
Most of them are surprised, and then they realize I'm not a nurse or in the medical field, because that's the first thing they assume. And then it's usually a pretty good conversation after that. They realize that we've come a long way. The Navy is very diverse now with all genders, all race, and it's always a good conversation. And I've always been very well accepted, no matter who I've met from the past.
We have been talking here on Essential Pittsburgh with Rear Admiral C.J. Janes. She is a Greensburg native and is the first female admiral at the Naval Air Systems Command. She's in Pittsburgh as part of the Navy's 50-50 outreach program, and has spent some time already today visiting with summer campers at the Carnegie Science Center. And as I mentioned, she will tour later today the Science Center's submarine, the USS Raquin. Admiral Janes, it has been a pleasure meeting you, visiting with you, and thank you so much for stopping by our studios to share your story with us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thanks for your time. It's been wonderful.
Coming up, a look at the region's many festivals and fairs taking place over the last few weeks of summer. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.